Good morning, one and all. Thank you for joining us today at our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the topic of God, the only cause and creator. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we welcome you all. We'll start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 77 of the Divinity Course in General Collectanea, otherwise known as the Blue Book. God is all in all, the only creator of the only universe and man. We are his children, and we do realize the all fullness of the omnipotence of God. There is no error of any name or nature in my consciousness that can resist, hide, or escape the truth. The light of truth and life and love shines straight through my belief of evil and banishes it, chasing it into its native nothingness. My desire is to know and obey God's law, to be filled with all the fullness of spirit, knowing only the consciousness of God good. My health, strength, life, intelligence, action, etc., are subject to the governing and controlling power of the divine mind and to nothing else, for there is no other power. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. See why Florence loves the Blue Book so much.
That's right.
Thank you. Right. Karen, our watching point.
Watch number 473. Watch lest you accept the suggestion that error has a cause or an effect. It is a belief without a cause or effect. Once Mrs. Eddy summed up the entire claim of evil as being typified by the serpent, quote, existing without a cause, end quote. The discussion of cause and effect in relation to error is merely to enable us to translate matter into mind and to comprehend Mrs. Eddy's statement on page 105 of Miscellaneous Writings, quote, nothing appears to the physical senses but their own subjective state of thought, end quote.
Thank you. All right, comments? How does one do that? How do you give error a cause and effect?
You uncover error.
You listen to it.
Yeah. Uncovering it is what you should do. Listening to it is what you shouldn't do.
Exactly. When it's uncovered, it has no place, but then it tries to attack you. But you just, by knowing it has no truth or reality, it's 2/3 destroyed.
Yes, thank you. And you know, when you think, you've been out in the cold, so you're going to get a cold, or you've been with people that are sick, so you're going to be sick, that is giving error a cause and an effect. And that is not is what we do. We wipe that out because we go back to God being the only cause and creator. Therefore, this other spurious cause is not true. So, and how you attack it that way and get rid of it.
I have a cute story. A young man was in high school. He had long hair. He lived in Buffalo, and he would take a shower every day, and his hair would be soaking wet. He'd go out, his hair would freeze, and he was never sick.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yes. Yeah. And I've heard other stories. Mothers letting their children go out in the cold and play and never sick. It's all your thought on it. If you are fearful about it, then you're giving it a bogus cause and then a bogus effect. So you go back to God being the only cause and the only creator, and there is nothing else, and you see it. Okay, Karen, were you going to say something?
Well, the rule for motives and acts, I keep going back to this for myself too, but when we prophesy, it says we shall not prophesy, you know, or does it say, in rebuking sin, in true brotherliness, charitable, and forgiveness, the members of this church should daily watch and pray to be delivered from all evil, from prophesying. That's what just you were talking about. Well, don't do this, or this is going to happen.
Thank
you. Don't lift that box too early. You're going to have a strained back. It just comes out of people's mouths like they're breathing, you know, and they don't realize what they're setting up for themselves. But everything is going to have an effect. If you do this, it's going to have, instead of going back to, well, there's only one cause, so how can that be? So it's,
thank you. That is using your rule for motives and acts. That's not just saying it in the morning and then letting it go. That is using it. So thank you, Karen. That is making it practical, which is what we should do. Those three daily duties are treatments that will protect your day. If you use them, you will have wonderful days and you won't be on the side of discord and dismay, but you will be on the side of science and peace, as it says in the lesson this week. Jeremy?
Oh, yeah, and everything in that list is for us not to do it erroneously. Erroneously is the key word there.
Right, so. That's right. In a negative, fearful way.
Yes, and in the same way. Oh. Sorry, go ahead.
Is that Florence?
No, I wasn't saying anything.
Stuff.
I was just saying, in the same way, when we have a claim, sometimes the first thing that might pop into your head is, oh, what did I do? Well, oh, that might have been this or that, or trying to find a reason for nothing. And instead, no, you talk against that suggestion. No, that didn't have any power over me, and only God does. So, yeah.
Thank you. Very true. Or you'll think someone is malpracticing on you or something like that. You're giving life to this. Error comes to you for life and you give it all the life it has. So it doesn't mean you don't handle the belief. You should handle the belief because the majority of people are believing whatever, that a cold air will give you a cold or whatever it is. You handle it, but you handle it as a spurious belief, a bogus belief, and is back to God being the only cause and the only creator, and that keeps you in science and peace. Lenny?
Well, I was just going to say that for the longest time, so when I went through class, one of the things that our teacher said was, you know, like when you think of spirit, think of substance, and, you know, we kind of went through some things like that, and he said, when you think of principle, think of like law. But I looked up principle in the 1828 dictionary, and our very first synonym for God is, the definition says, in a general sense, the cause, source, or origin of anything, that from which a thing proceeds. So I thought, isn't that interesting? I've been kind of going along always thinking of principles like this idea of like law or something, but actually the first synonym, principle, the very first definition is cause.
Thank you. That is interesting. Mm-hmm. That's why the looking up of definitions is very important. We think we know it, and perhaps we don't. And I'm going to jump to the story of Elijah in the lesson this week because it relates to the watching point. But Anne in England sent this first. Go look toward the sea, the Mediterranean, and she got this from the Berean Study Bible. This phrase is a directive from Elijah to a servant, emphasizing the act of looking with expectation. The act of looking towards the sea is an act of faith, expecting God's promise of rain to manifest. The number 7 in biblical terms often symbolizes completeness and perfection. Elijah's insistence on sending his servant 7 times indicates a process of spiritual completeness and divine timing. This repetition is a test of perseverance and faith, both for Elijah and his servant. It reflects the biblical principle that God promises requires patience and persistence and faith, persistent faith. So, biblical principle. And then this was very interesting, an article that Carrie sent called Elijah from the 1904 journal. And this can relate to our weather committee. And I will read an excerpt. First, it announces, Harry writes, the story of Elijah and his announcing the coming drought to Ahab. His announcement was, quote, that a famine already existed in the consciousness of king and people, end quote. And as Amos declared, quote, a famine of hearing the words of the Lord, end quote. Since universal thought has a direct relationship to the elements like cause and effect, there needed to be a change of heart and allegiance once again be given to the God of Israel. So we know, the Weather Committee knows how much mortal mind would seem to affect the weather. Here we're talking about what the Watching Point says. Human cause, then the effect. So in working on the weather, as Elijah did, we get back to the divine cause, the only cause, and therefore the only effect is good. And I love it in Science and Health, where Mrs. Eddy says, divine love is the father of the rain. It's so beautiful. So then it goes on in this article. Was Elijah causing a famine in this? By no means. What he did was to announce that a famine already existed in the context of king and people. Such a famine, as another prophet describes later, and this is Amos, is a famine of hearing the words of God. They weren't listening to God. That was what the famine was, their lack of God. Elijah's bold utterance simply uncovers the real nature of this condition and its logical result in a manifestation of the elements. That universal thought does stand in an immediate relation to the elements, a relation that involves in itself a law of cause and effect, is a fact clearly assumed and asserted in the scriptures. In Jeremiah, we read, but this people hath a revolting and a rebellious heart, and they are revolted and gone. Neither say they in their heart, let us now fear the Lord our God that giveth rain, both the former and the latter, in his season. He reserveth unto us the appointed weeks of the harvest. Your iniquities have turned away these things, and your sins have withholden good things from you. A further, and if possible, clearer statement of how and why evil comes is stated in the following chapter. Quote, hear, O earth, behold, I will bring evil upon this people, even the fruit of their thoughts, because they have not hearkened unto my words, nor to my law, but rejected it. End quote. So if the prophet precipitated this condition of drought, his words were the cause of it only as they uncovered the nature of this condition in Israel's thought as false belief. This is what Zari was saying. A claim that could and would be broken and removed only when the belief in Baal as Lord was broken and the God of Israel was seen as the one source of all power and good. So I think that's so well said for are handling the weather. If we believe these bad weather conditions are happening, we're believing in this, in Baal, really. We're not trusting in the Father. So we have to get back and replace those false beliefs of cause and effect to what's true and spiritual. We stay in the Father's house where the weather is always perfect. Enough rain, enough sun, everything perfect in the Father's house. It has been interesting to me to see when we've had very severe weather conditions, I've noticed it in America anyway. We had that storm Sandy a few years back, right before a presidential election. It was the worst storm I've ever been witness to. And then more recently, that storm in Western North Carolina, right before a presidential election, when the thought was in such turmoil, both times, often, this is what needs to be handled. God's presence and power only, and therefore the only cause and the only effect is God good. And in knowing that, if you can't save everyone, you can certainly save some people. And if you're in the middle of it, you can certainly save yourself. Which leads me to another very interesting article, also sent by Carrie. And this one was written by Bliss Knapp, and it's called Cause and Effect. Now, most of you know Cause and Effect and Bliss Knapp. Who was Bliss Knapp?
He's the son of Ira Knapp, which was one of the early directors.
Ira and Flavia, right, who also had a big job in the church.
They were very close to Mrs. Eddy. He knew Mrs. Eddy as a child. And what book did he write?
He wrote a book that the mother sort of didn't... First they let it go through, and then, which I have.
Destiny of the Mother Church.
You're right.
And in that book, he most clearly declares Mrs. Eddy as whom?
The woman of the apocalypse.
Which is why it was controversial. He wrote this article, and it was written in 1918, called Cause and Effect. And I will read what the summary that Carrie writes about it. Well, and I will explain cause and effect, looking at the disaster on the General Slocum. Okay, well, I didn't never heard of this before, but evidently there was this boat. I think it was like a paddle boat, and I believe it was on the East River. And there were 1,000 people from the Lutheran Church, mainly women and children, who lost their lives because of a fire on the boat. But two families lived because they obeyed the premonition one woman received the previous night, and she disembarked from the boat prior to its going out to sea. And because of that, and then another family who listened to her, they were saved. She got the premonition. And then it goes on, Bliss Knapp saw that the accident was detected as a condition in human thought before it had physical expression, and that a period of time intervened between the mental disturbance and its physical manifestation. Perceiving this, and Mrs. Eddy's admonition on removing, quote, disturbing cause so that, quote, there would be no inharmonious physical effect, end quote, he applied this to the fear of an accident he experienced prior to boarding a train. So before going on this train, he was getting this feeling there was going to be an accident, and he felt fearful about it. So he worked on this. All right. He didn't just dismiss it or even not go on the train. He knew that there could be no inharmonious physical effect. And he handled the fear. And while on the track at 4 a.m., the engineer reported that he was impelled by some power not of his own, and a power he could not resist, to stop the train, make an examination of the engine. The examination revealed a defect which required the substitution of another engine. As a result, of the engineer's obedience, all on the train were safely delivered to their destination 2 hours late. So it shows, and we all get these premonitions at times and sometimes wonder what to do with them. You either decide not to do whatever you were planning on doing, or you make sure you handle it till your thought is at peace, and you will avoid the situation from happening. In Watches, Prayers, and Arguments, on page 122, Mrs. Eddy says, "Your premonitions are what will save you if you employ them. The evil always works beforehand on the minds of those in health to fear or to believe they cannot help those it intends to slay. And if only this preparatory mental malpractice is understood, as I now trust it will be by you hereafter, it enables the individual to watch better and to have oil in his lamp. For each experience of this kind is a bridle that weds you to life and love everlasting." So pay heed to those premonitions. Don't just ignore them. Never. Or just think, oh, well, I shouldn't be concerned about it. That's just error. No. If something is stirring in mortal mind, listen to it. And then get to work to nullify it in your own thought. Who knows what you might save? And to a large degree, this is what our watches are about. And it also goes along in Science and Health on page 84, where Mrs. Eddy says, "If this science has been thoroughly learned and properly digested, we can know the truth more accurately than the astronomer can read the stars or calculate an eclipse." And she also says it's, you know, the prerogative of the divine mind to know the past, present, and future, doesn't she? Now, this is prophesying. This is different. This is something, you know, that just comes to you. It just comes to you like an angel thought.
It's called intuition. It's called gut feeling. Sometimes it's called inspiration. It has a lot of different names.
Angel thoughts.
Angel, exactly. But it's God speaking to you.
And I was wondering, if you just dismiss a feeling like that of, oh, there's danger, I better not go, instead of handling it, isn't that along the same lines of what we were discussing recently about the bland denial of truth? To just dismiss it without handling it?
Yes.
Isn't it also selfish, though? Doesn't matter about you, but what about the people who are going?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Because who is capable of loving everybody?
Jesus.
Working scientist.
Reflecting God, yes.
A good Christian scientist will love everybody, not just a few.
So when you have a thought like that, it's your duty to handle it.
Right.
Most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
It's your duty to God, to your leader, and to mankind. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You can have a thought like that about any situation, not when you're involved in. And that's I always do. If I get an uneasy feeling about something that's going to happen, you know, that's taking place, I do. I sit and work on it till I get my peace. Mm-hmm. Because you said it's selfish not to, Florence. It's selfish. You're We have a responsibility to be doing this, and God will tell us.
And this is what Mrs. Eddy trained the workers in her house to do every day, isn't it? She prayed for parts of the world that were in trouble. She prayed for people around the world. That's why she kept up on the news. She wanted to know what needed prayer and where it was needed. She didn't limit her prayers to, you know, Concord, New Hampshire or Boston, Massachusetts, or even just the United States of America.
Have you ever go to if you ever go to Chestnut Hill, you will see, you know, there was a front porch where she would sit in the evening hours, and there was a sort of a chaise lounge that Asa Eddy had given to her that she would sit, and it looked out on the streets of Boston, and she would do her world work there. And as we know, before, when she was at Pleasant View, she had a porch swing she would sit on in the evening hours every night and do that prayerful work, watching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who was speaking?
Well, I was just going to say she started a newspaper for that very thing, so that we would be aware of what was going on in the world. What needed our prayers.
Correct.
And to get rid of the yellow journalism, which was propaganda, which is, you know, very prevalent now. So be very, very careful what news we listen to, take in, because the propaganda is rampant, and it will get you to think things are going on or to hate certain people. Simply not true. So watch your thought, and it's never right to hate anybody.
Be careful what you read.
Be careful what you're taking in. So these are such important lessons, and that's why to develop your spiritual sense is so important, and you have opportunities every day to be listening to the Father in all these ways, in every way. What news you watch, who you talk to, what you take in. Make sure information comes from God, truly. Trust in truth and have no other trust. So, also in this lesson is in Joel, and it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be delivered. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance, as the Lord hath said, and in the remnant whom the Lord shall call. And I know several months back we had a round table largely about the remnant, and I will just mention it again. There's an article that we have online called Isaiah's Job. Now, this wasn't, as far as I know, wasn't written by a Christian Scientist, but it's very good. It was says it's extracted from chapter 13 of Free Speech and Plain Language by Albert J. Nock, an influential American libertarian author, educational theorist, and social critic. And he writes that, you know, people, when they address people, they want to address the masses, right? Everybody. Mm-hmm. But when Isaiah was called by God, he had to say some tough things, didn't he? As were the other prophets. The mass didn't like it. But the remnant did. The remnant is always searching for the truth. It's a smaller that is listening for the truth. And you don't water down your topic to please the mass. This article says, the remnant are those who by force of intellect are able to apprehend principles, and by force of character, at least measurably, to cleave to them. The masses are those who are unable to do either. And the main trouble with this mass approach, necessitates I don't know these words today, of one's doctrine profoundly alters its character and reduces it to a mere placebo. If, say, you are a preacher, you wish to attract a large congregation as you can, which means you appeal to the masses. And this in turn means adapting the terms of your message to the order of intellect and character that the masses exhibit. If you're an educator, say with college on your hands, you wish to get as many students as possible, and you whittle down your requirements accordingly. If a writer, you aim getting many readers. If a publisher, many purchasers. If a philosopher, many disciples. In the realization of these several desires, the prophetic message is so heavily adulterated with trivialities, in every instance that its effect on the masses is merely to harden them in their sins. Meanwhile, the remnant, aware of this adulteration and of the desires that prompt it, turn their backs on the prophet and will have nothing to do with him or his message. So, and then it also says, and I think this is wonderful, there's a certainty which the prophet of the remnant may always have, and that is that the remnant will find him. He may rely on that with absolute assurance. And remember in that story about Elijah, where he thought he was doomed, and then God revealed to him that there were 7,000
faithful worshipers.
Faithful worshipers.
Who never worshipped Baal.
Now, to me, this speaks to New Age. You know, let's water it down. Let's make it more acceptable. Oh no, you don't want to keep your service the way it is because it's boring. You know, you need to have a rock band or something. I don't know, but you don't want the service. I'm talking about the Christian Science Service. Let's water it down. Let's not use the King James Version of the Bible. Let's use
a more modern.
Yeah, more modern version, easy to understand.
Or we have to rewrite Science and Health because right. It has words that a lot of people don't understand anymore. Whoa.
And let's
somebody
get rid of
the
dictionary.
The 1828 dictionary. Thank you. Yes.
Because we don't want to know anymore.
Mrs. Eddy says in the preface, she says, the author has not compromised conscience to suit the general drift of thought, but has bluntly and honestly given the text of truth.
Thank
so
you.
So she starts right out with that.
Yes, she does.
Well, yeah. She was under a lot of pressure, wasn't she?
Yeah.
She had a lot of opposition. And the devil kept telling her, through her sister, through family members, through so-called friends, give up this crazy idea. Write something that will be a little bit easier for people to accept. But that's not what God wanted. And she knew it.
Yeah, but she also says in page 110, I love it. She says that no pen... No human pen nor tongue taught me the science contained in this book, Science and Health. And neither tongue nor pen can overthrow it. That's just a little bit of it. So,
exactly. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Quotes from Science and Health, both what Lenny and Florence read, extremely important. And so here we stand, the remnant. And keeping the purity of it. To me, this is one of the main purposes of this church is the purity. Why we have the early workers, the ones that knew Mrs. Eddy, were taught by Mrs. Eddy. We try to keep our website full of only pure science, no adulteration of it. And some of the later ones do begin to adulterate it. And it does get into a sense of New Age. And I've been told that by the people who have had experience with the organization, that a lot of it is getting New Agey in the articles. We want its purity. Again, cause, effect. The cause, purity. Mrs. Eddy, the woman in the apocalypse. And then the effect will be pure.
And that's why we have Wednesday testimony meetings, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Which we want to talk about. Thank you. Make sure when you're giving a testimony, it is one of healing. You stay under the 4 minutes. We are going to get stricter on this. Carol and Bruce now, if you're going over or you're not making a point, they're going to tell you, please come to your point and sit down. We have to do this because otherwise the testimonies will just turn into people just talking about certain experiences they had. They might be a great experience. It might have been a wonderful thing for this person, but it does not make a good testimony. Very often you'll lose your audience or if you get too graphic in what you're talking about, people come to our testimony meetings for healing. And many of them in dire straits. If you start going on about something graphically, or you're just talking about some experience you have, that doesn't help them. Ask yourself, will this testimony help somebody else? And then if you keep going on, Jeremy's going to just zip, you're over.
Every good testimony should be able to be given well within 4 minutes.
Or shorter.
Here's the problem I had. Here is what helped me. And now I am better.
Thank you.
That's also very important. I have this problem too, because for me, it makes sense. And then I have to think about, well, will somebody new understand it?
Thank you.
And another thing that's really important, if you listen to the testimonies from Plainfield, they go, you know, sometimes they're an hour long. If you go to some Christian Science churches in Hamburg or maybe other places, you know, people talk about parking lots, but you don't have meaningful, testimonies where people say Christian Science works. People do show practical examples and how this does work, but this is a science. And this helps me many times in the middle of the night.
Thank you very much. Yes. Absolutely. We have to know people come to this church, they come to our Wednesday night meetings to hear these healing testimonies. And the other churches there are not that many testimonies in the first place. And then certainly there's probably no 4-minute limit. And so they go on and talk about things. And it becomes rather useless. This is where, again, we purify a cause and effect. It has to be the right motive, the right thing being sent out, and the effect will be a blessing for everyone, and not just a discussion. Mrs. Evans would talk about refrigerator testimonies, because she would say someone would get up and give a testimony because, I don't know, their refrigerator broke down. They got a new refrigerator. Okay, well, that's okay. But then, my refrigerator broke down and I got a new refrigerator. Oh, and my dishwasher, and I got a new dishwasher. So the whole meeting is about something like that. We have to be alert and aware. If something like that is happening, then make sure you get up and give a good testimony of a healing. This is your responsibility, but we are going to take a more of a responsibility of cutting people off. Occasionally there's a new person. Usually it's new people that tend to not know this. And so we try to be a little kinder to a new person till they catch on. Or if you're having some tremendous healing and it does take over 4 minutes, well, that's okay. But if you're just having a talk about something, well, that's not okay. Craig, do you want to say something?
Entirely so. The remnant would seek to hear healings. They want to see that. And the purpose of their life is to continue it. And I love the way Mrs. Eddie and Jesus said works. You have to have works. If you don't have works, what do you have? People came to them for those purposes. And they keep coming to us because when they hear the works. You know, their healing works and the things that they can't explain. So, you know, it's our responsibility to make sure that we have those works. We prove what we're reading.
Yeah, and when God does your life, don't be bashful. Don't be afraid to tell the world that God did something wonderful for you. There are people who have had wonderful experiences, healings in Christian Science, and for some strange reason, they're afraid to talk about it. They're afraid to tell people about it. Don't ever be afraid. You never know how much good you're going to do by telling somebody that God helped you.
It'll be like the 9 lepers that didn't turn back.
Right.
So they were healed, but they weren't made whole. Only the one that gave thanks was
gave
made
thanks.
Whole.
Thank you. And now, Jeremy,
I think with the motive to bless, You know, if you really just want to bless someone, why wouldn't you say it, right? What has happened to you that makes you see God, the God that we worship, the Redeemer? Why wouldn't you want to share it to bless someone else? It's a motive.
Yes, it's a motive always, yes. Your motive is to bless someone else. And we were taught here to always, perhaps not always, but usually give the statement that helped you, some statement of truth that you got from Science and Health or somewhere that was a blessing, that so it will bless someone else. The other thing is to watch the Christian Science jargon, as we say. You know, you get up, you have this wonderful healing, and then you say, well, it wasn't real in the first place. Well, maybe.
Or I had a seeming problem.
Or had a seeming problem that
appeared to be a problem.
Appeared to be a seeming problem. Now, you have to realize, especially on a Wednesday, Jared, our organist, is listening and he's searching. And if you get up and say you had a seeming problem that appeared to be there, what
and
is that?
And he's Jewish.
Yeah. Yeah, he comes from that faith. So I always, when I hear something, I say, well, what would Jared think of this? Or if you say, well, it wasn't real anyway. I mean, be careful of these blankets, Christian Science jargon statements. Otherwise, you're annulling the whole thing.
It turns people off.
Yeah, it does.
It wasn't real anyway. It just makes people think, why are you talking about it?
Exactly. So listen. And if you, it's good to take notes when you're going to talk so you don't just ramble on, or it's good to write it all out, as some of I know you do, and then ask yourself, how will this bless someone else? And then you'll be on good ground.
And this is why we always read a testimony every Sunday during the service, because they are the testimonies that are in our textbook and that are in prose works are good models to follow.
Yes, they sure are.
Anyway.
And you'll be very glad if you start writing your testimonies out and giving them, because then you'll be able to look back. You're like, oh yeah, 8 years ago, I had this issue. I forgot all about it.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a complicated testimony either.
It better not be.
Yeah.
Because the truth is simple. It's not simple, complicated.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not an intellectual discourse. That's where people get off. They're really trying to show how they know or something, and they just start talking intellectual. This has to be on something simple, grateful, heartfelt. And when heart speaks to heart, right? Heart speaks to heart. We're not interested in intellectual or a huge amount of quotes. So
one nice thing is, I like, you can measure your progress by quality of your testimonies over the years.
Thank you.
It's helpful to all of us, the individuals.
Thank you. Yes, it's very good. This is your gratitude journal to write down your testimonies and remember them. It's very important.
Okay, moving on.
Right, we don't want to spend too much time. Okay, let's see. Nancy, I'll let you speak on what you sent to me a little bit. It kind of summarizes God, the only cause and creator.
Yes. I looked up the words for our subject, and in Webster 1828, only, single, this and no other, this above all others, for he is the only cause, that which produces an effect, that which impels into existence or by its operation produces what did not exist before. Creator, the thing that creates, produces, or causes. And then I looked up create, to produce or to bring into being from nothing, to cause to exist. And Mrs. Eddy writes in Science and Health on page 207, and this meant a lot to me. There is but one primal cause. Therefore, there can be no effect from any other cause. And there can be no reality in aught which does not proceed from this great and only cause. so very clear and simple. And it brought me to think of our citation too in the lesson in Ecclesiastics. I put the word therefore, but whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it, that men should fear before him. And Matthew Poole explains, whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. All God's counsels or decrees are eternal and unchangeable, and his providence works effectually, so as men cannot resist or hinder it. Nothing can be put to it nor taken from it. Men can neither do anything beside or against God's counsel and providence, nor hinder any work or act of it. That men should fear before him. Not that men should make this an occasion of despair or idleness or dissoluteness, as some abuse this doctrine, but that by the consideration of his sovereign and irresistible power in the disposal of all persons and things as pleaseth him, men should learn to trust in him, to submit to him, to fear to offend or rebel against him, and more carefully and industriously to study to please him. I like that.
Thank you. Yes. We study and work. I've told you this, but before the pandemic, it came to me three times. And it was like an angel dream. It's hard to explain how it came to me, but that there would be biological warfare, but that the people working in this church would be safe. It came to me three times. And I wasn't quite sure what to do about it, except to pray, which I did do. Now sometimes I hear, and I have to watch my own thought about it too, that pandemic did so much damage. Well, let's take cause and effect to this. Mm-hmm. No cause. It was animal magnetism. There was no real cause. It was a fabricated belief. It was. If you don't know that, you better know it. How can you say that a pandemic has any power, any substance, any law, any cause? It did not come from God. Therefore, it does not. Therefore, it can have no effect. No lingering effect. And if you know that, if you seem to be suffering from some effect of the so-called pandemic, the nameless nothing, as I called it, then you can nullify this. And you should. The only cause and the only effect is God Almighty. And we will not bow down to this spurious belief. Okay? So, and that is how you do it. If something has seemed to have happened with a human so-called cause, it's a fabrication, and you do not have to have an effect from it. This is how you think you had an accident? No, you didn't. There are no accidents in mine. God was always with you. His angels bore you up with their hands. There can be no effect from it. But get into your truth, get into your science, and use this truth, and you will find tremendous results. Okay, we're going to end that.
And we have that beautiful promise from Joel. And I will restore to you the years that the locust hath eaten.
Thank you, Tony. Yes.
Exactly.
Beautiful.
And it's all. Okay, we're going to read an article entitled Joy Through Humility by ABI. Initials from the 1902 journal. And it reads, David says in the 8th Psalm, quote, when I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him, end quote. The psalmist in humble mood had caught a sense of the all power and presence, and the abasement of material self followed as a natural consequence. And so, mortal mind, dreaming its sad or merry material dream, comes ever and anon into a semi-wakeful state in which it catches, as it were, through a glass darkly, a glimpse of the infinite. It may be the view for the first time of some stupendous work of nature, a lofty mountain peak capped with snow and solitude, a rushing cataract, or a wide-spreading sea. Or it may be the changing of the colors on the autumn leaf, the budding of a flower, or the myriad splendors of the summer evening sky. Or it may be only a quiet word of truth spoken in love, which, catching mortal sense in its semi-wakeful state, whispers of the presence of the infinite. Then finite sense, glimpsing the infinite in that moment, bows humbly before the presence of the mind omnipotent. Pride, self-will, self-righteousness, self-justification, all go down to their native nothingness, and mortal mind, stripped of its shadowy armor, cries humbly, "What is man that thou art mindful of him?" This humbling of mortal sense is the presence of the infinite. Must in the presence of the infinite, must have been preceded by a sense of humility. Had mortal mind concerned itself about the mountain peak only from a climber's point of view, or watched the budding flower from a purely botanical standpoint, or scanned the glorious evening sky solely with the weather prophet's eye, it would have missed the deeper means which tell of God. Self-wisdom knows no God but self. In Science and Health, page 240, we read, quote, "Nature voices natural law and divine love, but human belief misinterprets it. Arctic regions, sunny tropics, giant hills, winged winds, mighty billows, verdant vales, festive flowers, and glorious heavens all point to the invisible intelligence above them. The floral apostles are hieroglyphs of deity. Suns and planets teach grand lessons. The stars make night beautiful, and the leaflet turns naturally towards the light." End quote. The awakening state of mortal mind, its turning from the dream of matter, is always a humble state. Otherwise, the dream goes on, and the seeming awakening is but a different phase of its jumbled illusions. Therefore, it is only when mortal mind is, so to speak, humanly humble, when purely material thoughts are cast for the while aside, when speech is silent, and the senses still, that the presence of the infinite is felt. And once felt, a humility deeper than human awe comes with the thought of the all in all, and we begin to turn from sense, from self to soul.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.